Hi, Steve Artimer here, and welcome to the New Life Live podcast. We hope to provide help and hope in your life through God's Word, counselors, and psychologists as we answer questions from listeners who call with the challenges of life. Let's go to today's episode.
Welcome, New Life family and friends. We are so glad that you are with us today, and I'm glad to be here because I get to share time and space with good hearts and brilliant minds in Dr. Alice Benton. How you doing?
Hi, Chris. Doing great.
Excellent. And Dr. Jackie Mack Harris.
Good morning.
How's it going, my friend?
Going well.
You doing well?
Doing well. How about you?
I'm doing good. Okay. I'm doing good. So I'm getting over that cough and sickness and all that. Good. So, you know, we're on the mend.
I like it.
Yeah. Good. All right. So, Alice, back to you. What's been on your mind? What have you been thinking about? What do we need to talk about this morning?
As a psychology nerd, I've been checking out some research,
And
I've stumbled across a researcher I never heard of before, Dr. Kelly Lambert, and she studies neuroplasticity, which is basically brain health and whether or not our brains are losing connection, losing ability, or growing, strengthening, improving, and she does research with rats, and she has found that rats who are forced to work for their food are happier, more stable, they have better frustration tolerance. So she's transferred some of that research to us humans, and she theorizes that too much convenience and ease in our lives, although it's comfortable, is not better for our brain health after a certain point. And so when we have to work with our hands, whether it's gardening, doing the dishes rather than using a dishwasher, doing crafts and artwork, assembling furniture, even doing an oil change on the car, we are happier people who grow better frustration tolerance when we have to work with our hands off screen.
Oh, that's great.
It makes a difference in our brains.
Yes.
And I realized one of the times that I feel most productive, fulfilled, satisfied, my dad's an auto mechanic and he taught me how to change my oil. And so when I get to do that on my own car, there is just a sense of joy at a job well done that's hard to access in the brain work and the computerized work that we do as therapists. And so forcing ourselves and asking our children to work more with their hands will lead to a better life, a happier life, and better frustration tolerance.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I love that. That is great.
It might be bad news for me because I'm not very handy. But this really speaks to a neurological and a spiritual truth. I'll start with a neurological truth, and that is passivity leads to reactivity, which is a lower part of the brain into the amygdala, and that our creative and regenerative brain in our prefrontal cortex needs to be activated. And to your point, it also needs tolerance. This sounds strange. It needs failure. It needs frustration to build that resiliency to work through it and to overcome it. And to your point, Alice, we have this great satisfaction of overcoming and accomplishing something that I think speaks to a spiritual truth, and it's this. God has created us as creative beings. And our purpose in life, and one of our main purposes in life, is to create that which is good and that which is useful, that which is helpful, or that just sometimes which is beautiful.
It's interesting that he tells us we should work for our food. Biblically, we're told to do that and to ask others to as well. Rats that work for their food, they're happier. God's got something in it for us.
And we're going to live with this tension in life, and that is the toil of our hands is toil, for sure. But God's blessing and God's movement and God's life is still in it. There will be frustration and hardship, and we have to build this also resiliency to work and to rest and build a relationship between those two things. So, Alice, that is so profound, such incredible research. And like I said, brilliant minds, and I get to share the space with them all the time. We're so glad that you're with us. We're going to head to a break right now, and we'll be back right after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back to New Life Live. And right now we are going to Becky Brown. Becky, are you there?
I am here, Chris, Alice, and Jackie. I'm so glad to see all of you in California. You know, we're real excited. We talk about life coaching and life recovery all the time. You hear us talking about it all the time, right? We are seeing the impact of people working in recovery, but also we're seeing the impact of life coaches. And Steve has presented a series of courses for credentialing for the International Christian Counseling Institute. I know that's a lot of words, but one specialty that he is working on or that he has worked on, and they're offering a special discount, is a coaching certificate in life recovery coaching. And, you know, I just want to let you all know there's a lot of you out there that are thinking about getting into life recovery and life coaching. Here's the great combination. We know that you don't have to be a certified coach to do life recovery, but what a great opportunity to learn and to get some credentialing that could benefit you, benefit the people that you serve. And we just want to let you know about it. If you will go to ICCICoaching.com, you'll find out all the information. Just look for Life Recovery Coaching. And, of course, Steve Arterburn. And that's what I've got for today.
Becky, I took a couple of those courses. They're inspiring. They're motivating. They take really profound ideas and put it into practical application, both for just your own growth, and then how to help other people. They're fantastic courses. Can't recommend them highly enough.
And Becky.
Yeah, and you know, well, go ahead, Chris.
Oh, I was just going to say, one more time, give out the information of where people can get connected with it.
Very good. It's ICCICoaching.com. And to what you were talking about, Alice, you know, a lot of times people question if life coaching is legitimate. You know, I can tell you in our network of life coaches, they are all credentialed. They've all done the studies. They've gotten the certificates. And we know that it's a new field, but boy, they are making an impact in the lives of so many people. And I was able to present to the ICCI group a couple of weeks ago on the topic of life recovery and to help them understand how recovery does impact all of us. You hear us talk about this all the time here, that recovery is for everyone. And they could see how knowing about recovery and becoming a credentialed life recovery coach could make an impact in their practice and in the people that they serve. And so we just want to let our audience know about that as well.
Oh, thank you so much, Becky. And yes, if you're interested, I mean, take advantage of this. And the other thing I want to say on the other side of this, if you're entering into an area of life recovery and you need a guide, let me tell you, as a person who guides other people, the last person on planet Earth that I can guide is myself. I am blind to me. I'm stubborn to me. And the therapeutic and coaching guides that I've had in my life, the spiritual guides, have just been so, so invaluable. So if you're looking for a coach, you can go to newlife.com or call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE, and we can connect you with a coach to help you break through to that next area of healing, health, growth, and vitality in your life. And with that, we're going to guide someone else in that process, and we're going to Sarah in Boston, Massachusetts, listening on WEZE. Sarah, are you there?
Hi.
Hi. How's it going?
Oh, it's good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Better now that you're on the phone with us, so tell us what's going on.
Okay, so about a year ago, my husband had an affair with the mother of his son. And it was while we were away together. And so I gave him chances to go to therapy together. And he was just super, like, not into that. So I left and I separated and I was just done. And I was just really focused on taking care of myself and healing. And he was just so persistent about getting back together and working on things. And so I kind of gave in to that. So we did go to Hope Restored in November, which was really great. Like we learned a lot of tools. But then it just feels like after that, it just went back to like the same thing, and it's been really hard to know if he's, like, if I should trust him again. Like, it feels like I've taken on his role. Like, I've been going to a lot of therapy and trying to heal, and I'm just, you know, he's still talking to the mom because he has to, and I've had to ask, you know, I'm like, can you show me, like, your texts or show me something where I can trust you? And I'm just like, I want to have a family, and I'm just, I feel so depressed.
Yeah. And so, Sarah, what's the question for us today? How can we help you?
So when should I just walk away from it, you know?
Sarah, this has been devastating, and he continues in communication with his affair partner and has to because of their son. Oh, what a position for you to be in. Tell us, what kind of ongoing structured work is recovery work is he doing to prove whether or not he's trustworthy?
Nothing. Oh. It's like I'm the one that's kind of like, I've gone to so many therapy things, and like, you know, and it's like harder for me to heal now than it was when I was away from him, because it's just like a wound that just keeps being opened. And he's doing, like, I mean, he's gone to the Hope Restore, but after that, it was like that was just a check off the list, and now there's just no effort.
Yeah.
And when you ask him to get back into the process, what does he say?
That like he doesn't want to keep going back to the past, and it's like we need to just move on from it, and if I can't handle this then it's okay, like, let's separate as friends and be nice to each other. So it's like there's just no he kind of gets defensive about it.
So he has basically told you, I'm not willing to do anything more. You have to become okay with our situation as it is.
Yeah.
Oh, Sarah, he is abandoning you emotionally, spiritually, while staying with you physically.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I'm 31 and I want to have a family. And it's like, I don't want to waste my time, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's reasonable. And it does sound like staying would be wasting your time. He's not willing to do work. You have been doing work. Has anything in the work that you've been doing revealed or uncovered maybe anything from your past that might have made this you more susceptible? Did you come out of a family where there was adultery?
Yeah, I've done a lot of work on my dad had an affair, and there was like not a lot of love there, and my parents' relationship was emotionally abusive, so I've done a lot of healing with that. And
do you feel like you've kind of recreated your childhood home in this marriage?
I mean, not like, maybe a little bit. I mean, my husband is kinder than my father.
Yeah, it's a different kind of emotional abuse. He wants to still be friends with you if you separate from him, maybe kind of like he's still friends with his baby's mother. And so you have to, I think you have to ask yourself the questions and ask yourself why you're staying. More than should you leave, why are you staying?
And I think I get kind of like, I think I'm like, well, God hates divorce, and I kind of get
he hates adultery.
Up in that.
He hates adultery too.
And so I think I know what to do, and I've done it, which is so frustrating. It's like I got through this, so I'm not afraid to go through it again. It just, I feel really kind of disappointed.
Well, and so. That disappointment makes so much sense. Sometimes people aren't at a place where they are going to be monogamous. And often they aren't honest about that. And what I hear you saying is that he's telling you, I've done what I'm going to do. This happened in the past. You need to get over it and move on, which is unfortunate because our past is still a part of our story. And whenever people say that, it feels to me as though they're asking for permission to ignore something that hurt you. And mm-hmm. you don't have to do that. If he doesn't want to join you in that, and you've been doing your own work, if he's not willing to join you in the continuance of the work, then you're by yourself already.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's how I feel. It's like I'm doing all of this stuff, and it's like, yeah, it's just not, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
Sarah, there aren't just two options. It's not just stay married to him or get divorced from him. Mm-hmm. Because there are steps in between that God asks us to take that can reveal more of the truth that you need to know. It's pretty blatant that your husband say, no, I'm just not going to do the work. But when you start to separate yourself, as you did before, when you left before, it woke something up in him. Hey, I want to do work. Hope restored. I'll go to that. Granted, he stopped pretty quickly. But when there's an absence, when we distance ourselves, it sometimes kicks into gear our spouse's desire to save our marriage. But we have to back away far enough to find out if that will happen again. And then we have to stay away long enough to find out, is there more than a weekend's worth of work in you? Or is there just a weekend's worth of work? And so I want you to consider whether or not you have taken the boundary steps of emotionally separating, physically separating, and if those aren't sufficient, then you move towards legal separation. And if necessary, sometimes we have to move to divorce. But we first have to take a stance and give a warning. And we have to tell our spouse, I still want you to fight for us and to work for us if you genuinely do, which I think you do. But if you choose not to, I'm going to have to start protecting myself in some different ways. And and you and I know, Sarah, that that means those levels of distance. But it's not just stay or divorce. How do you react to me laying that out?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Will you tell me what you feel hearing it from me? Especially if you have a negative reaction to it. I would if I were you.
I mean, it's just so frustrating because I did that.
Yes, you did.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, why didn't he just leave me alone and let me just heal? You know, because he didn't.
Sarah, so let me jump in here. Because I think there's something here that's really important for you. There's a key missing piece. And here's what it is. A clear definition of what it means to be married to you and it be uncompromising. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because what happens in this, and this oftentimes happens in our betrayal traumas and in our traumas, especially with the people closest to us, we're avoiding the loss. And so we get really, really wishy-washy and end up losing ourselves.
And people can confuse you. They can use language to turn things around and make, like, pull your shame up. Mm-hmm. And so then you stay because you're feeling somehow you're doing something wrong. Meanwhile, you're being harmed.
And so there's two things here that I want to encourage you with. And that is, as you're moving into this separation, into detaching emotionally and detaching physically, there is this clear thing. It's one, understanding what betrayal trauma is and how it impacts. He's saying, I want to move on and move in the past, but it's still present to you. That tells me a clear indication he does not understand your pain. Mm-hmm. And he does not understand trust. Therefore, he doesn't understand relationship. The other thing is that you need to be more deeply connected to your relational needs and be strong and uncompromising in them. Meaning that, like, if you want to be married to me and you have to stay in communication, then that communication has to be transparent. That is a need, not a desire. So I just want to give you that because we're going to send you a copy of Dr. Sherry's book, Intimate Deception, Healing the Wounds of Betrayal Trauma, and dig into that. Thank you so much for calling us, Sarah.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
I'm Steve Arterburn with a New Life Moment. Don't you find telemarketers annoying? Wouldn't you like a surefire way to make a quick end to your next encounter without resorting to saying something rude? Well, it's really quite simple. Just tell them that you're satisfied. That's right. Tell them that you're very happy with what you have and aren't interested in whatever they're selling. It's the one response they're not prepared to hear. You know why? Because the basic assumption they work from is that you're unsatisfied and discontent with where you are in life. That's a fundamental assumption that's easily made in our materialistic, consumer-driven society. Benjamin Franklin once said that discontentment makes rich men poor, while contentment makes poor men rich. The Apostle Paul said this disposition of heart doesn't come naturally. It's something we must learn, and it's never too late to start. If you find it tough to be content, well, you're not alone. Visit me, Steve Arterburn, at newlife.com, and thanks for listening to this New Life Moment.
Oh, it's so great to hear from Steve and his very, very timely wisdom. It's in Proverbs where we hear that contentment is of great riches, to his quote from Benjamin Franklin. And what a clever antidote to telemarketers. It's like, oh, no, I'm good. I'm really happy. And I'm not here to let you disrupt my goodness, my happiness. So, but we all also are here to help people move the needle towards a little bit more contentment, a little bit more happy. And with that, we're going to go to Christina in Pulaski, Michigan, listening on Sirius XM. Christina, are you there?
Yeah, actually I am. You just caught me at the right time.
Good. You happened to catch us at the right time, too. It all came together. It's wonderful.
It did, indeed.
All right. Talk to us. What's going on?
Well, I've been listening to this caller. Sounds like a lovely young little lady, a nurse that works in a facility where someone is changing from a man, you know, this trans thing, man, mm-hmm. to a lady and whatever. And first of all, I love the Lord. I'm a big time Christian and I know Jesus loves everybody. I get it. My whole thing about it, I was driving and I got upset because I thought these people at this facility, from what I'm understanding, and I hope I'm correct in this from the caller, that the staff in this facility has to cater to this one man/lady regarding bathroom issues.
Mm.
And it sounded like she was, you know, they're confused about it. You know, they're Christians too, obviously. They're calling that station. So I don't know. I just stopped my car and I thought, I have to call and get this off my chest. You know, like whatever happened to majority rules,
mm-hmm.
like if this staff is uncomfortable with bathroom issues and they're catering to this individual who's doing whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't quite get it.
Yeah. So Christina, is there a question for us around this issue for you?
Well, the question is what
do we do? What do we think about this?
What do you do?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Okay. And the answer that I heard from some other staff member was, you know, they didn't really, well, they kind of answered it, but it was like, well, Jesus loved everybody, you know, the prostitutes, the bad guys, everybody you love. I'm not saying that, not to love this person, but if a staff is uncomfortable with this catering to one individual, that's, I guess, my question. How do you handle that?
Well,
and that was that lady's question, too. She's a nurse.
Uh-huh.
And that basically, I guess, wrapped up what she was trying to say.
Well,
I hope I understood that right.
Yeah, well, I have a couple of thoughts on this, you know, and so my first thought is, man, we're living in a more and more complicated world. That gets more and more complicated to navigate. And that's where I believe in a growing need and desire for wisdom. Because in the wisdom literature of the Old Testament, what it does is it helps us get into the details or the nuances. But we also come back to principles. And I think that there is one particular principle that we need to take very, very, very seriously. And this principle is our need for safety and security in areas of vulnerability. And I think we can be uncompromising in that, to be honest. Because if we don't have safety and security in areas of vulnerability and pain enters into that, there is this word that we as therapists use all the time in regards to that. It's called trauma, and it can have a lifelong effect. And so we want to be compassionate, and we want to be understanding towards other people and their hurts and their wounds and their pains and their struggles. But we don't have to be uncompromising in our own needs for safety and security. So you hear the music. We're going to talk a little bit more about this because I'm coming at it from a therapeutic and a male perspective here. But I would love to hear from Alice and Jackie and their immense wisdom on this as well. So stay on the line, Christina. We're going to come back to you right after this. But I do want to talk about safety and security in our sexuality. Guys, if you're struggling in this area, don't minimize it. Don't overlook it. Please get help. In April, we have a sort of no excuse every man's battle. And the no excuse every man's battle is it's going to be online on Saturday, April 13th. If you're struggling in this area, you need safety, security, and health and integrity. Please sign up today. Go to newlife.com and we will get you connected. And we'll be right back after this.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope, and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back to New Life Live. It's Chris Williams, Dr. Jackie Mack Harris, and Dr. Alice Benton. We are talking with Christina and really trying to navigate some of the nuances from a call on a previous show that was dealing with transgender issues and bathrooms and the complications of that, you know, and I'm really advocating for a strong principle of safety and security, privacy, and a right to privacy in vulnerable spaces, you know. But what do you guys think?
Christina, I'm curious if you have a personal connection to this broader issue, because you can have a strong emotional reaction to just a societal matter, but oftentimes it hits something close to home. And so, go ahead.
No, sorry. I'm in my car. I pulled over, of course. I felt sorry for the nurse that was placing that call, and it sounded like her staff has to make accommodations for this one individual that's going through that trans struggle regarding the bathroom. And I think I understood her right, that she, you know, there's some confusion, and the word safety has popped up. I don't know if that lady, if the nurse, if their staff feels unsafe. I think it's more of an uncomfortable issue. But my one point is, like, you know, majority rules. I guess it doesn't anymore. I don't know.
And
I mean,
Christina, have you ever had a personal experience with a similar situation that was unsettling, upsetting, uncomfortable, or unsafe for you?
Nope.
Not that you can think of. Okay.
Yeah. Not at all.
So I'll also give my opinion about how we're handling this in society. And I think that historically, we stood too much on just pointing out the blatant truth without giving enough grace for people's experiences. And by that, I mean we had a stronger stance in the psychological world, in our diagnostic and statistical manual. We had a stronger stance of what gender, what sexuality was supposed to be. And anything apart from that was unhealthy. It was a deviation. It needed treatment. And we didn't have enough compassion for what people were going through that led them to some of those deviations. We had too much truth and not enough grace. And back in about the 1970s, that started to change with some activism from the LGBTQ community. And it pushed us, I think, to an opposite extreme. It pushed us to an extreme of grace and acceptance and tolerance, and we lost some of that stance of truth. And it almost becomes unacceptable today to speak opposing truth. It should all be grace and acceptance. And I think we will be better off if we can hold to both ends of the spectrum. Too much truth without enough understanding hurt a lot of people, ostracized many people because we didn't listen to their stories. Jesus gave the example of taking the time to listen to people's stories and to point out what brought them to this point of engaging in unhealthy, sinful, or immoral behavior. He listened to their stories. We didn't do enough of that in the past. But today, I think we're now missing out.
Excuse me. My point is that the staff, the staff at the facility has to accommodate one person.
So you know what's coming up for me? What's coming up for me is as how unfair that feels to not be able to use the bathroom in your workspace. This isn't the first time we've had issues around bathrooms as a people. When one group decides that it's uncomfortable or doesn't feel accepted by another group, there begins to be a separation. We used to have blacks only entrances and blacks only bathrooms, and you would have to go and walk to another building to use a bathroom, even though you were working in the Space Force, even though you were working in NASA, you would still have to go to another building to use the bathroom because that was the law of the land at the time. And so we're sitting in another period of time where the law of the land is more inclusive, and it's inclusive in the restrooms. My husband had an experience a couple of weeks ago, and he's a pastor and also a roofing inspector, and he was in a bathroom, and as he went to wash his hands, a woman came out of the stall. It was a unisex bathroom, and it was a unisex bathroom with multiple stalls. He was uncomfortable, but had to sit with... He wouldn't have known it was a woman because the doors were, the stalls were secure enough. But it was really uncomfortable for him. And he didn't like being in the bathroom with a woman, but he felt unsafe in that it would make her feel unsafe. The woman didn't seem to care. And so I think we have ideas which are really just constructs of what we believe things should be like. And we, as Christians, tend to forget the whole world isn't Christian. And so there's a whole world of people who don't know Jesus the way that we do, and they're just living their lives. And their life, a lot of times, doesn't look like what we as Christians have constructed to be our truth. And that is how the rest of the world is going to see it, because they're not walking with Jesus. And we're walking with Jesus by faith. They don't have that. And so they're coming out of their natural stories. When I was in training to be a nurse, I remember being in labor and delivery and a doctor having to make the call of whether that was a boy or a girl. And so it's not an unrealistic thing. I do think I agree with Alice that we've gone to the other extreme. And so that I am concerned, but the trans problem is a problem because the babies didn't get to decide and the parents didn't know either. And there are people who are born with either both sexes or you can't really tell from the outside which it is. And so consider a decade or two decades ago, now those people have become adults. And they're starting to push back because what they feel like doesn't match what they look like. We can't do anything about that, and we're not living in their experience. But because of how cruel people can be, they've began to fight, as Alice said, for other rights and protections. And I think it's going the other direction in the extremes. And now we're feeling uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I love when I go to a space and there's a men's room, a women's room, and then a family room. Mm-hmm. Mm. Let's if we're saying that there are more than two genders or sexes or sexual identities or whatever that might be, then we could have an extra bathroom. Mm-hmm. Right? I would still like to be able to go into the women's restroom and not encounter men. Mm-hmm. If I go into the women's restroom and I encounter a trans woman, I don't know she's a trans woman. I'm assuming she's a woman, and so I don't care.
Yeah.
So I think there are three practical ways we can deal with this, mm-hmm. Christina. First, I think we have to try to give benefit of the doubt, and we have to acknowledge, I don't know that person's story. I don't know what brought them to this point, because we tend to be quick to criticize and be judgmental. Mm-hmm. I do anyhow. But if we can give people the benefit of the doubt, because we all have a history of suffering, we all have a history of pain, and then God wants love to be our priority. Love God. Love his way and love other people. And so treating people kindly, treating people with grace. But the third is, if an issue continues to bother us, we've got to check, is God nudging me to say something? Is God nudging me to take a stand against this thing that does not seem right to me? Mm-hmm. But we should do that with caution, with prayer, and by checking in with wise counsel before we say something.
I agree with that, because I was thinking about the nurse. Mm-hmm. So if that staff is feeling uncomfortable because now their bathroom has been taken away from them, they should be having a conversation with HR.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you guys bring up just, again, I mentioned before, good hearts and brilliant minds. That's what I get to share space with today. And Alice, you were saying something, and you're explaining something as well, Jackie, that I think in the complication of the world today, and I don't just think, I'm deeply convicted by this, we need more than ever a deeper, more profound, more humble pursuit of both truth and grace. When we see in the first chapter of John that John describes the Messiah coming into the world as light, as life, but then takes it a step further and says in the fullness mm-hmm. of truth and grace. And I think sometimes in our finite humanity, I can do this, I can make this mistake, is sacrifice truth for grace or sacrifice grace for truth. There is a mystery and a profundity in the Jesus life that says we don't have to sacrifice mm-hmm. either of those things. That we can move into a more mature, deeper, and profound expression of both love and truth. It doesn't mean things will go well for us, because it didn't always go well for Jesus, but it does mean that we are in an alignment with an eternal power, an eternal truth, and working that out in the nuances and details of life can get really complicated. But again, I just think that that is what we have to offer ourselves and the world around us. So thank you two for reminding me of that today. Christina, thank you so much for calling in today. And we're going to send a copy of Take Your Life Back from Steve Arterburn, and hope that that blesses you and blesses you well. And we're going to be back right after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back to New Life Live. Chris Williams, Dr. Jackie Mack Harris, Dr. Alice Benton, and we're going to go to Peter in Boston, Massachusetts, listening on WEZE. We love our Boston area listeners. Peter, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah, no problem at all. Talk to me.
Yes, I have two children, and they did great in high school, good grades, and we had high expectations, and one of them even got a scholarship, mm-hmm. but they just refused to go to college, both of them. They're working, but they just don't want to go to college.
Did they say why they don't want to go to college?
One of them said that it's nonsense. You know, there's not any specific reason.
How old are they?
19 and 21.
Yeah, right now they're not willing to pay student loans. They don't believe college is helpful, and they're going to go to university and have all that money to pay back to the government that they're going to send somewhere else. Like, it's a whole thing. Gen Zers are pushing back on capitalism, quite honestly. But I don't know that we let you get to your question, and your question is...
Actually, I even offered to pay for half of their college.
Yeah,
you know, and one of them was taking it online, you know, which is way cheaper. The other one got a half of a scholarship, and I offered to pay for half of the other half, but they just don't want to do it.
Have they talked about what they want to do in life?
The younger one is trying to start a small business, online business, in the fashion industry. You know, he's okay. Working hard on that. But we know that it's hard to be a, you know, self-employed.
Yes.
It is. Entrepreneurship is pretty tough. And there are lots of other ways of learning along his path. If he's going to open a business, he is going to get an education.
Mm-hmm. Peter, how does it affect you? Emotionally, how does it affect you that they won't go? Seems like it probably upsets you, disappoints you, worries you?
My wife and I, we are both disappointed. But they are happy kids, no drugs, they work, you know. Well, what can you do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Are you and your wife college grads?
Nope, we are not. We are immigrants from Brazil, and we work hard, and we have a decent life. We offered them a decent life, but no, we are not. We never went to college.
Well, Peter,
we didn't have the opportunity.
I want to offer something to you. I think that you have given them an incredible education. Mm-hmm. There is a kind of real estate guru, self-help guy, and just a really inspiring guy, strong Christian as well. His name is Brian Buffini. He wrote a book called The Immigrant Mentality. And, and I think that you and your wife represent that well. And what that is you come to this land of opportunity and you work it really, really well through ingenuity, through resiliency. And that's got to take a lot of belief and a lot of grit on your part. Guess what your sons witnessed?
It's coded in their DNA,
yeah.
Right? You and your wife don't have college degrees, and you are talking about being able to pay for your kids to go to college.
Yeah, that's remarkable.
Right? They don't see the need because their parents are hard workers, and they see you as successful. And so there is another path, and it doesn't mean that they won't go later. I wasn't mature enough to go to college right out of high school and didn't have anybody backing me to do that. Matter of fact, I was hearing, you hated high school. Why would you waste money going to college? So I went to the military. But at around age 26, I realized there were some things I needed to learn in order to do what I wanted to do in life.
Yeah.
But I was 26 when I started, and I started at a junior college. Mm. And I picked what I wanted to do and paid for it myself, and I've worked my way through it, but it was because I chose it, and that's how I ended up here. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I would have done well had I gone straight out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
Peter, do you know what you want from us about your disappointment with your kids?
No, I just wanted to find out if you have any suggestions on how to convince them to go to get an education. That's it, you know. We can handle the disappointment because we see the good side of it. They're very happy. They're, you know, well behaved, work. So it's way better than a lot of people.
I would actually caution you against trying too hard to convince them. Especially with the way that they are working and still pursuing life in what sounds like a pretty healthy and stable manner.
And they're happy young adults right now. That's beautiful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's so much depression going on right now with our youth. So the fact that they're happy, it's everything.
Yeah.
So instead, I would encourage you to surrender their decision. Hold your hands open loosely that they get to decide. grieve your disappointment. It's sad. It's okay to be sad that they're not picking college. You all worked really hard to be able to give that to them, and they're not taking it. It's so frustrating as parents when we have something good to offer and our kids turn away from it. It actually angers me. You're disappointed. I get angry about it. But what we then do after surrendering and grieving, we seek to understand. We get curious, but it's a gentle curiosity that works. A critical curiosity, an accusatory curiosity does not work well. So ask them questions about it, more questions. And then you can consider whether or not you will require them to go to college, especially if you're funding their lives in any way, if they're still living with you. Some parents can do that. They can require that. It can harm relationship, though, to require something that your children are so dead set against. So I would be hesitant to require it. Rather, I might consider leveraging it. You've already done some of this, but you might consider, how would you reward them if they chose to go to college at some point? You might sweeten the deal more than just paying for the college. Is there something more you will do? Because we can influence our adult children to make good decisions. It doesn't tend to go too well when we force them to make the decision we think is right for them.
Right.
Well, and the last thing I'll say about that, because I think you bring up a really good point, is as parents, we have dreams for our kids. But here's the danger of the dreams that we have for our kids. It puts us in the God position and takes God out of the God position. We're not God. And so we have a will for our kids' lives for certain. And when they don't follow our wills, we can be pretty disappointed.
Or angry, like Alice.
And as human beings, for whatever reason, the myriad of reasons, they can also make very painful, unwise, foolish, and stupid mistakes, just like I did. And so sometimes we got to, in this one I want to encourage you and your wife with, Peter, is we got to say, man, we did a phenomenal job and did the best we could. And we are disappointed that they are choosing something different than what we would have for them. And yet, my goodness sakes, we are there to provide for their career and vocational path where things become necessary. To Jackie's, my brother never sat a seat in a college classroom, not one time. Mm. His financial viability is much greater than mine, even though I have two advanced degrees. Mm-hmm. It's just a different path. I wouldn't trade mine for his. It's just a different path. And his didn't require college where mine did. And so I just... Yeah, exactly. Same thing with Robert. I would just encourage you along that path and be grateful. We're so glad that you're great parents. We're so glad for your story and your contribution here in America. Thank you for being with us, Peter. We're also going to send you How We Love Our Adult Children by Dr. Jim Burns, and we know that's going to bless you. We hope you all were blessed today, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you'd take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.